So we normally start off by saying good afternoon, yes. Is Eva. How Hello. Do you want us to address you, by the way?
That's Eva.
Eva, right. Yeah. So today is the 12th of
April.
So that's why there needs to be two of us, because I forgot the date.
1913. That's 2013.
So today's the 12th of April, and we're here to interview Eva Zermay. So one of our first questions usually is, where were you born, and what was your name at birth?
I was born in Hungary, Budapest, and my maiden name is Eva Friedman.
And what did your parents do?
Originally, my parents was from the country, but I had a brother. So when my brother born, I think after 2 years, they came up to Budapest. And my father was working then in a family paper factory. He was a manager. It was a family business. So that is was his last job as well, mm-hmm. before they sent him away. Mm-hmm. Because when the Germans came in, they couldn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. Everybody was sent away.
Right. And so did you go to primary school?
Yes, I went. You know, it's a different system, mm-hmm. in Hungary. Primary was 8 years.
Oh, right.
Yes. And then after you could go to the middle school or gymnasium. But just when you got this age, it started 6-year-old, the school. Not like here, people go much earlier, children. Mm-hmm. So some people was nearly 7 when you, mm-hmm. got. So when I finished my 8 years, I was 14.
Right. And what's the difference between the middle school and the gymnasium?
Well, the gymnasium is like grammar school, mm-hmm. you know, much higher,
mm-hmm.
give much higher, mm-hmm. education. Mm-hmm. My brother went to grammar school, they learn Latin, and, you know, it's
a very traditional.
Yes, uh-huh. yes. So I went to a very good Jewish primary school, but later on, I started to go to another school for a very short time, maybe a 3/4 of a year, mm-hmm. before I couldn't go anymore. Mm-hmm. This was not Jewish. But we had a rabbi, mm-hmm. come once a week, and then they were teaching us, you know.
And what age were you then when the Germans came in?
I was 14. I wanted to study, of course, further, but I couldn't because, mm-hmm. the Germans came in. And I think it was the first thing that they brought in the numerus clausus laws. I don't know if you heard about it.
But if you want to explain that, would
yes,
be...
is that mean that between 100 pupil, they took only 10 Jewish, and this had to be, of course, the very best. And then just imagine that in a big school was much more than 100 people, mm-hmm. so how many Jewish they could take, and so I didn't get in.
Right.
And they didn't accept me, not my brother, no. Mm-hmm. So. This was in 1943, actually. So my father found us some apprenticeship. I went to learn photography. I was 14.
When you learned about photography?
Yes.
And so how long did you do that for?
As I said, that's not very long, mm-hmm. and was, mm-hmm. not very proper. Mm-hmm. Because actually, if you would read my diary, you can see that it is more detailed. You know that when you're an apprentice, they don't teach you. Mm-hmm. You just have to watch and try to learn something. And so what I had to do, every day I had to clean the workshop.
Right.
Sweep up the workshop and dust. And after I had to go down to the cellar and bring up a big coal, mm-hmm. a big... How do you call this?
Pale.
Yeah, coal. And I have, if I don't know if I have a picture to show you. It was a very thin, very tiny little girl. But I had a very nice boss, you, mm-hmm. know, my boss. He was not Jewish, but his wife was Jewish. But they didn't live together. But he didn't divorce her because he wanted to shelter her.
Right.
But they didn't live together anymore. So he was a very decent man. Mm-hmm. So many times he came and helped me to carry, mm-hmm. up. He was the boss, you know. And they had to make fire. It was, mm-hmm. 2 shops.
Right.
It was a shop where they sold, you know, photograph machines, mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. and papers and other things. And another was the actually where they made the pictures.
Right.
You know, the one salon.
The studio.
A photo studio, yeah. So if I'm thinking back, what they let to do me to develop the pictures in the dark room, I could do this sometime. Because that is how it is if you are an apprentice, you know.
You just pick things up in a...
Yeah, so they, you know, you cannot do things. It's not, it was 3 years contract, so, you know, it takes three years to learn things. But as I said, that I'm supposed to go to school as well to study certain subject, you know, beside. And I couldn't go because we had to wear the Yellow Star House. Maybe I went once and then my boss said that it's called Joseph. Why don't just take off your Yellow Star and just come, he said. So I did a couple of times, but and then my parents said that there's no way, because they could shoot me.
I was going to say, was that not very dangerous to do that?
It's very dangerous, very dangerous. So my parents didn't let me to do it. So I couldn't go.
Right.
I couldn't go anymore. We were not allowed to travel, as I said, any public transport or go to cinema or theater or library, nothing. Jewish people were not allowed to go anywhere. And as I say, that was my education of as a photographer. It was not very long.
So the war started, and you said you went, where did you go?
That,
you said that you left.
Yes, and then soon after we had to leave our house where we lived.
Right. And was that the whole family?
Yes, my father and my brother and my mother, yes. We were four of us. And then we had to leave to go and live in a designated area called Yellow Star Houses. It was in the old Jewish quarter in Budapest. And then non-Jewish people, they had to go out. And then we moved in. And then we couldn't take furniture or nothing with us, practically just... very little things. That is how it started, you know, really very bad time. And then immediately my husband, my father was called up. He had to go to the army at the same time. And my brother also.
This would be the Hungarian army working for the Germans.
That's right. They had to work together with the Germans. But the Jewish people couldn't do that even if they would wanted to because they didn't trust them, so they had to go hard labor, you know, dog benches or how do you call, and other heavy things. Actually, my brother had to go to the airport because cleaning
the
rumblings after the bombing. Bombing was very hard, you know, very hard bombing. It was every day was bombing. And this was the most dangerous place because,
of the bombs.
You know, and of course they wanted the Jews to do these jobs. So my brother had to go every day. They took in a bus and then at the beginning he came home for the evenings. He was allowed to come, but it just was a very short time. But actually my brother was very good because he was the head of a scout group, a Jewish scout group, and he was 18. You know, he was a bit grown-up boys. So they decided they do something, wanted to do to save people. So they managed to make false documents with them and took off their Yellow Star in the evening. And they went out the road looking for people where they stay there, because people were arrested for no reason, you know, because it was a curfew, I forgot to tell you. We was not allowed to go out from the Yellow Star House, just 2 hours a day to buy a little food, just locally, you know. So if somebody they caught outside, you know, they just took him, you know. So they went out the roads and was looking for, and when they saw that some people were arrested, they went there and they showed their papers.
And said that
yes,
they were...
and they said that have to take this person. We got the order to take this person somewhere else.
Your brother was doing the hard labor.
Yeah.
And
my father as
and
well.
And your father as well. And
yes.
So
we didn't know where they were. Mm-hmm. But one day my father came home because his stepmother died. And they got 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Came back for the funeral. But we didn't see him. We didn't see him.
And what happened after that?
We were in the Yellow Star House. Mm-hmm. And then the life was not very good there. Because they just came in every day, practically. And then shouted up the order. You know, it's different mm-hmm. houses there. They got this, how can I say, this is the floors. And it was open ground. Did you mm-hmm. see houses mm-hmm. like that? Mm-hmm. And then we, like a balcony, mm-hmm. you know.
Like a courtyard.
Courtyard, yes, yes, sorry. Yes,
there.
So they everybody, they just shouted up, or I can't remember, and something, they ring the bell, and we have to go out. And then they said the orders, every day something new, you know. And then every day they came up with something new. Mm-hmm. And then, but the general thing was that everybody has to go for labor or deportation. We didn't know. From 18 to 40 women, mm-hmm. and men, I think it was, that's right, men was up to under 60. That is what my take. My father, he was 59. And mm-hmm. then I remember we were so sad because the other people were they taken the same time and they said that they are younger. Mm-hmm. I mean older, oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. And they came home mm-hmm. and but he didn't lie. Mm-hmm. He didn't lie. I don't know why. He should have said. Because people have no papers, not everybody
yes.
had, you know,
yeah.
not everybody had their papers that time already.
So was your mother older than 40 then?
My mother was older and I was younger, so mm-hmm. that is how we managed to get to the ghetto, you know,
right.
we didn't take.
Mm-hmm.
But I say that, but it doesn't mean anything, it just really was pure love
not
and God yeah. looked after me, as always
yeah.
say that.
Yeah.
Because all my school friends, mm-hmm. got worse situation than me. They were deported, same age.
Yeah.
And they died, they didn't come back from Budapest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it just was pure luck that, just for no reason that you were unlucky, they got you, you know? It has no explanation, you know? But this was the general rule,
mm-hmm.
you know, that as I say, that if they caught you, I don't know, after the curfew, and then they took you, and or other any reason, you know, you didn't know every minute they, you know, you didn't know what is the other minute bring,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it was not, and we just alone, my mother and me, and then after a while, my mother saw that the people started to disappear from the Yellow Star House, but we didn't know what's happening in the world. We didn't know what's happening in the country
mm-hmm.
because, unfortunately, most of my family lived in the country. And then I don't know, probably heard about that they all took them to Auschwitz, but we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
They took them first to little villages or towns, to bigger towns in ghettos, and then stay there, I don't know. Was not in the same time, you know, they took them different times. And they took them to the wagons and took them to Auschwitz. And then most of my family died except my two uncles came back.
So eventually you were taken to the ghetto?
Yes.
How old were you then?
Before that it was a lot of things happened, you know, that because we find out that various people disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably they heard about Raoul Wallenberg.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in the Swedish embassy. He was there and he tried to save people.
Mm-hmm.
and he people went and then they got a document, my original is still in this book, I will show you. And then my mother found out that people moving in so-called safe houses.
Right.
So is that meant if you went this, they accepted you as a Swedish citizen example, but really you was not, but it's a collective. Mm-hmm. You got like under,
as
you
a,
know.
As a group.
And then is that mean they had safe houses in Budapest. They bought up, actually, mm-hmm. houses, the embassies,
right.
Switzerland, I think Rome, yes. It was very good, but very few people, I think, mostly who became Catholics, you mm-hmm. know, they helped them. And Sweden and Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And then they bought houses, and then you were able to move in, mm-hmm. out from the Yellow Star House, you mm-hmm. know, that time. And then my mother heard that. She didn't tell me. I just heard afterwards. You know, she didn't tell me. One day she got up and dressed up her best clothes, nice hat, I remember, and a nice blue coat. And without the yellow star, she went out.
Without the yellow star?
Without. And she said to me that, I have to go somewhere, but I'm coming back soon. And then she went away, and I was waiting and waiting, and she didn't come back. Because she went to a place where she'd been told, you know, mm-hmm. from somebody that you can buy a Schutzpass, it's called, mm-hmm. I don't know, heard this name. Mm-hmm. This was a document called Schutzpass. And let me show you. And then for all our money, what we had, little money, that give it to a place. She went on the tram. And it's interesting because afterwards she finds that everybody was like her.
Yeah.
They were all Jewish because they were all arrested in the way back, you know?
Oh.
So she went there, she gave her money, she got this document, and then when they came out back to the tram, they were all arrested. And took them away in a brick factory that was outside Budapest. And she spent the day and night sitting on the bricks outside, mm-hmm. winter time was already October or something. Was very cold, no food, no water, nothing. But she managed to find somebody who was willing to take a note for me. And she had nothing else, she had her wedding ring, because you were able to keep your wedding ring. You have to give in mm-hmm. all your jewelry, but you were allowed to keep your wedding ring. So she gave her last possession to send me a note. And I was alone at home, and my mother didn't come home. I was crying my eyes out, and didn't talk to anybody, didn't turn anybody. And I got the message early in the morning because as happened that the house where the Yellow Star House was, it was my great uncle's, he owned the house, used to own, you know, mm-hmm. because he was Jewish as well, so he didn't own anymore, nothing, didn't own anything. Actually, he was a professor of, is a child specialist, so it's a house manager. It was there, who originally, you know, mm-hmm. Jewish. Mm-hmm. So he got the message, and he immediately went and phoned to my great-uncle
right.
that I am alone, my mother was there. So he made arrangements for me, and then this woman, house manager, said that you just dress up nicely and take with you a change of clothes, and then somebody will come for you. And the next morning, my cousin, who I didn't see, I don't know how many years, he came for me because he was hiding. Mm-hmm. And then he said, no yellow star, just don't wear a yellow star. I was so afraid. And then he took me, not very far, where my auntie was hiding. They took me this house. And then, ironically, my auntie was hiding in is a German house where all German officials lived. And she was working for a lawyer who working for the Germans as a housekeeper. But the lawyer knew she was Jewish. You know, he was hiding her. So that is I was taken, and my Auntie Alice, that is how it's called, she had a very tiny flat. So I've been taken there, and I've been told that I am not allowed to pull the toilet even then. I have to be just quiet because nobody allowed to know is anybody there.
Nobody was here.
And then my cousin had to go because he was working on the airport as well, so he left me alone. So I was so tired, I just went and slept because all night I didn't sleep. I just was crying, what's happening, where is my mother, you know. So later on the morning, somebody came to the flat, my auntie, and then she said that they recovered my mother because this lawyer was so...
Influential? Did he have influence?
No, he had the, you know, influence, yes. Sorry about my English.
No.
He had the influence that he hired a car and went out to the brick factory and then was looking for my mother, but she didn't find her. But in the meantime, what happened that day, 50,000 people were arrested all over the road. Where they got them, everybody was taken to the brick factory. It's happened because but the Germans was losing the war. You know, a lot of other countries was liberated. And then they were running away. And they wanted, not wanted, they did herd the people, 50,000, foot to Austria. They had to walk to Austria. But they took this, who was 18, under 18, or over 40, they didn't take. So, but my mother was released. So that is why they didn't find her. But this man just went on the road and find her. It's amazing. It's amazing, yeah. So my mother came home, poor thing, in the nice hat and the nice coat. Looked terrible, you know. But I was so happy. And then he was very, very disappointed because we have no money left at all. We couldn't buy anything. Not because you could buy a lot of things by that time, you know. So we just were sitting around and we heard about they're going to take us in the ghetto, but we didn't know when. I don't know anybody else it was in the ghetto my age. I don't know. I didn't know anybody. I knew that two boys was there, was a bit older than me. That's all I knew. I didn't, also my mother never let me out. You know, because she was worried me, a girl, you know. So she didn't let me go anywhere, anywhere. And then sometime they came and we had to go to clear the rubble after the bombing. And she was hiding me behind the cupboard, put away the cupboard. And I had to go stand behind the cupboard, you know, because knew I was there. But she said, I am not home. She said, so I never went to clear the rumble, you know. It was dangerous. It was dangerous, really.
And how long were you in the ghetto for?
You see, in Hungary, the ghetto was not stand very long, I said, because the Germans was already retreating. And then was very big fighting, it was, you know. And eventually the Russians came first. They arrived first in the country, but it was very, very heavy fighting, you know. The Russians lost a tremendous amount of people, you know, in this war as well. And then they were the first to approach. And example, in Budapest, was house-to-house fight was, you know, it was so severe still, because the Hungarians had to still fight, and then the Germans were still there, but you know, the packing, they took everything and they were going away. So they put us in a ghetto because they couldn't do anything else. It was in the Jewish quarter, and then very quickly they, but I think it was 3 meters or 4 meters high, walls around, and when you get in, you couldn't get out from there, couldn't get out. But in a way, it was lucky that, you know, we managed to get in. And as happened that, we were between the first people who get into the ghetto, and it was a big advantage because we managed to get a room with a single bed when we sleep together with my mother. And then it was a small room, and also was a double bed where is a couple with their, one of the, I think, the father-in-law. The three of them were sleeping in a double bed. But it just was the beginning, because when the bombing and, you know, when sometimes 10, 15 people was sitting on the floor during the night, because they bombed out, they had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So it was not very comfortable, but we were still very lucky. We had a bed, and then we took a pillow and a duvet, and remember I was carrying on my back in a rucksack. So it was really not too bad, you know, at least we had a bed that we can put our head down, you know. So it's a ghetto, you ask me how long it stands, it's about, I think, 9 weeks and 3 days, because we were liberated in the 18th of January, 1945. We were liberated.
By the Russians?
By the Russians. So after that, and other people, Hungarian people, they were Arab people, they called. Arrow people, because they were just made a, it was an arrow in their arm, you know, like the Germans had the swastika, and the Jewish, we were the yellow star, they had an arrow. And they were all Hungarians, Hungarian, but they were worse than the SS. They were worse, they were horrible, they were terrible people. Example, they went, they didn't honor the houses, you know, the safe houses, people. They just went there and then took them to the Danube, it's a big river in Budapest, and then shoot them, thousands of Jewish people who were supposed to be in a safe house.
Yeah.
So in a way, we were lucky we didn't get there even.
Yeah.
We were luckier to get in the ghetto at the end. You know, we didn't know. You know, we didn't know, but that's later on, you know, we realized that. But in the ghetto, it was not a holiday place, I cannot say that, because we were starving and was freezing cold. It was about 17, 18 minus in the winter. Winter is very cold in Hungary, and big snow. And I never forget, it's always before my eyes, that people who died on the road after, so that when we were liberated, they shifted the snow very high beside the curbs, you know. And then when somebody died, they just threw there, and the snow came over and froze in. It was frozen dead people. It was terrible, it was always before my eyes, you know. I never forget that. So it was so cold, and there was no heating, was no warm water, was no food. My mother became very weak, and because she was older, you know, and I was always hungry, starving. And then every time, as I said, the same story. They came for these people, they come for that people. And then they came for me as well one day.
Did your mother, did she hide you, or?
No, they couldn't. They couldn't. I could read you this part, but I can't say it or anything. It's, you know that it always was somebody who was in the lookout, if anything wrong coming, we tried to save ourselves, you know. They were together, the people there. And one day a man ran to us and they told my mother to immediately put me to bed because they're coming for me, two SS men coming for me. Because later we find out that the housekeeper, house manager, was not Jewish, they stayed at the house. And he reported that that is a beautiful young girl hiding in the ghetto. Because I told you that was not my age group. Mm-hmm. I didn't meet any, not one, my age group. But it was a really exaggeration that a beautiful young girl. It was a very tiny, very thin little girl. And I had two little pleated, my mother put, you know, and I was starving. So everything you can see, but I was not a beautiful young girl. Luckily. So my mother immediately put me in bed, and they told me that to say that I got heart condition. That is why I'm staying all the time. I have to be in bed. You know, this they told me, this man who brought the news. And I tell you that it was not maybe 5 minutes. They put me to bed, and they put my mother, they hid my mother away. You know, I was alone in the room. And then these two men came in. I tell you that they were two beautiful men, toe to toe in black leather, SS, two SS men, young, I don't know how old, maybe early after 20 years, young people, beautiful, everything beautiful, boots, shiny, you know, beautiful, two men came. And they came in and they said to me that, why are you in bed? And they just said, I am very ill. I said that I cannot get up. I have to stay in bed. They ordered me out to the bed, get out from the bed. So I came out. I didn't have a very nice nightie. I cannot say that at that time, you know. Maybe I had one and I had to wash it all the time. So I come out without shoes and anything, a tiny little girl I was. And they looked at me, and he said that, would you like to come with us? That is what they asked. Looked at me up and down, and they just said, I said that I don't care. But I don't think I could walk very far. Why? I said, I can't walk, I said that, because I am staying in bed all the time. Just imagine, I had to do that. And I was lucky, because they started to talk to each other. And they didn't like me, thank God, they didn't like me. You know, I was not a young, beautiful girl. Yes. And then they said that, go back to bed. We advise you, don't get out from bed because we are watching you. And they left.
Terrifying.
And you know that they brought my mother. She was in a state. And we later find out she had her first heart attack. She got a heart attack. She was so worried about me. And then everybody was so happy. And everybody brought me something that they had. They were really so nice, the people there, that I escaped. You know that I heard a lot of stories about what they did with girls in the concentration camps. I know about my own cousin. I know about it. So that is how was it. Actually, I went back after the war when I was liberated. Mm-hmm. Yes, I went back and it was very good because there was nothing to eat, was no food, not just for Jewish people, nobody had after the war, you know. The whole country was in ruins, Budapest was in ruins, all the bridges was blown up, example, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was very hard and was nothing, you know. It took long time until the life started to go back to somewhat normal, you know. So it was very good I went back because I got a little wages. And then also it went with, they had to give me lunch. So
you could get a meal.
So because they are was not Jewish, they had a little at home, you know, more than because we had nothing.
So when the Russians took over, could you notice the difference between the Russians and the Germans?
Yes, of course, they were liberators, okay. Of course. But you know that after when we eventually liberated, that we were not allowed to go on the road, especially me, young girls, because they raped all the girls. Yeah. Unfortunately, I had a friend called Eva Fischer, went to school together. She was a big girl, blonde, plump. It was there, probably, I think, the Russians, you know, a little bit like.
Yeah.
It's terrible what they did to her. And then they give her some jewelry and then sent her to the hospital. And then we heard that she got better and they went away to the country. Never seen her again. Never.
So after the Russians came, what happened to you and liberated? What happened to you and your mother?
As I said that, it was 3 days, you know, when an army came. This was free. They robbed everything. They break up all the shops and steal everything and rape the girls, but they could. And I don't know what else they did. You know, I don't know. There was 3 days. That is a rule, I think, for the soldiers. And they remember only that it was a kosher wine cellar. And they broke this up, and the whole road was full of the wine, because they opened up the big barrels. Mm-hmm. And then I remember my mother managed to get a little bit of it and brought home, and there's some biscuits somewhere, because they opened up everything.
Just looting everything?
Looting, yeah. Ransacking, yeah, but terrible. But I don't know, I didn't see, because I was not allowed to go out, because they said better a young girl to stay in. So I think we stayed at least about 10 days in the ghetto, and then it's a little bit, everybody started to go out, and everywhere was the big tanks with, you know, it's facing you with rifles and everything.
Uh-huh.
And my mother and me, she said, my mother, we're going home. And then it was very big snow and very cold. And then she managed to get, how do you call what you pull in the...
Sledge.
A ledge, little ledge.
Yeah.
So we have our possessions, put it on, because we had no strength to carry anything. And then we went back where we used to walk, but no transport, nothing, was no gas, was no electricity, was nothing, no heating, was nothing, you know. It was all ruined, everything. And then what's happened in the way, I still was wearing my yellow star, because we thought that maybe save me from the Russians, if you save, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I remember we went and was... It was at open ground, I can't remember where was it. And so she saw that a Russian came, and we got very frightened. And he just came to us and was watching that. And then came over and took out a pocket knife and cut it off.
Ah.
And cut it off and put down and stepped on it. And then said something not nice, probably. And they didn't know why he does it. And it turned out it was a Jewish. He started to speak Yiddish. It was a Jewish Russian. And then we didn't understand very well, but he said, don't worry anymore, you know. And then I remember they gave me a biscuit. Probably that was all he had. So I always remember this episode, you know. Because many people ask me if I have my yellow star, but I said no.
Mm-hmm.
But some people have, you know, but I don't have.
So we went back
and we went to the house manager, and then we said we come back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said that don't go up. Don't go up because other people live there. And then we said, but this was ours, flat. So they were very bad after, you know, was not happy to see any Jews was alive and came back. And then we didn't go up. We were afraid to go up. So we went back to, but was nowhere to go. So we went back to the Yellow Star House. And as it happened, in the Yellow Star House where we lived, it was my auntie's flat. They lived originally in this flat. They gave us a room when we moved to Yellow Star House. So she let us to go back until we find something. And eventually, I think maybe after about 6 months, we managed to get another in the same Yellow Star House. Was not Yellow Star anymore. But we managed to get a third floor flat. But we had nothing. You know.
So how did you end up in Britain then?
How did we end up here? I got married to my husband in 1949.
Right.
Still the situation was not how it should be, you know, but we married. My husband wanted to marry. He was 7 years older than me. I didn't want to get married because I just was 19 that time. But he was 27, so he wanted to get married. I was 20 when I got married. I was very young. We got married, and then my husband was a first reader. In this Bethlehem Terry synagogue. I lived with my mother-in-law because there was no chance to get, you know, was no money. We had no money. And it was bomb zones, a lot of houses. We couldn't get a separate flat. So I lived with my mother-in-law. But it was not very convenient because we had a room and she had to walk through me. And then if you want to go to the bathroom or the kitchen, you had to go through me. So it was not very ideal for a young couple. But, you know, but we had to be thankful somewhere at least to settle.
What were the Russians like with Jews? Were you allowed to practice Judaism?
Oh, no. You cannot say that it was communism in Hungary. Socialism, you know, was not very strict. But no, you cannot do it. That is what we came away, actually, because we were religious. And you was not allowed to practice, not just Jewish, any. And was no religion. My husband was lucky because my husband that time, actually, before we came, he was not a Hazan anymore. He was an opera singer. He was a member of the Hungarian opera. And then he just had to go on Saturday for rehearsals. And he could walk because it was not a distance where we lived. And then, so we always could keep the Shabbos, you know. And then, of course, he was also still a Hazan, very much sought after beside. So we were financially, really was very good financially. But it is not that was not the matter because we still didn't like the life, you know. It was not allowed to say a word, anything against the government or anything. But of course, everything was, how do you call this word? You know that they took away everything, the government.
Nationalized.
They all took away. We had nothing. They couldn't take away from anything. We had nothing. We already took away everything. We had nothing but to take away. So one day, somebody rings the bell, and who was there? My husband's school friend from Mattersburg, when they went to school together. It's called Samuel Soberman. We called Shamu. Him. And then he actually lived in Budapest. He still lived in London. So Shamu saw my husband. They saw each other. He came in and then he heard that my husband survived and asked around. But my husband was quite well known, you know, a Hazan, you know, Jewish. And then, you know, between. So he find us and then He said to my husband, that why are you living in this horrible anti-Semitic country, what they do to you? He said, why do you live here? And my husband said, why don't you come to England? And my husband said that, he said that you are a good husband, you could get a good job, a good wages. And my husband said that's a jokingly. He said, if you find me a job, I come. He came home. And soon after, he sent us Queen's Park Synagogue address. They were looking for a husband.
In Glasgow?
In Glasgow. I remember it was a beautiful spring day. We went out somewhere in the green and sit down in a little table for a coffee. And my husband and me wrote a Yiddish letter to Queen's Park Synagogue. And maybe after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the letter came in Yiddish. And they said that they're coming with a European tour, and they come to visit us, if is that okay. But they didn't say when they're coming. And I remember it was a summer day, and every summer Sunday, when my husband was free from the opera, we always went out to the hills. You know, we liked to go every week. Agnes was alive by that time, my older daughter. And I remember in the morning we left, even I didn't make my bed, we just went away, make some sandwiches and we went out. And then when we came home, the house manager knocked on the door and he said that foreign gentlemen was looking for you, that I think they came from Vienna. We said, they didn't understand German or English, probably, I don't know what language they talked. And then they said they're coming back, 8 o'clock. So quickly made my bed and we changed and then made some coffee, I remember. And then really 8 o'clock, the two gentlemen knocked on the door, two old men. And then they said that who they are. And immediately, I am not a good Yiddish speaker, but my husband was very good, you know. And then immediately they could talk to each other. So they came in. We had a very little flat, as I said. We had one room and my mother-in-law lives in the other room. So they came in. Well, they had a nice room, nice furniture. It was nice, but very small. I had a bed, but I opened up for the night and closed it, you know, so you can sit on it during the day. So Mr. Rosin and the brother came in, and they asked my husband to sing something for them. And then later, they confessed that they saw that the whole house will collapse on them, because got such a big voice, my husband, they saw that it will collapse the house on their head. Oh yes, so they were very impressed, and they said they'd be coming home, just started the tour, they said, about 3 weeks' time, and we have a big meeting in the shul, and then you will hear from us then. So, in the meantime, you know, in Hungary, I don't know, other opera house, probably about house. In Hungary, the opera closed for 2 months. July and August, there's no opera for summer break. So we went on holiday, Balaton Lake, that is very nice in Hungary. We went to holiday, and then, but my husband had to come home. Every Saturday night, he came home. He went home to Budapest, because he was appearing in the open-air theater in the Margaret Island, was open air, beautiful. He came home and he said that he got the letter from, and they said they sent a ticket for me, and they want me to come to here. So they sent me a ticket from Vienna to Glasgow, and then sent money to buy me for Budapest, Vienna. Not Vienna, Glasgow. It was later when we came eventually. And then I had Agnes, and then we had a passport, but you will not understand, because it was a visitor passport, because we couldn't go travel anywhere from this communist country. But they give occasionally, if you were lucky, you could go. If you could afford it, you could go. And my husband had a cousin, second or third cousin in Vienna. Max, and then he invited us. But anyway, and my daughter Agnes was on my passport because she was, you know, no separate passport. But we couldn't take her. I mean, we couldn't take her because they wouldn't let us, the whole family, because they knew that many people just forget to go back. So we didn't want to risk that, you know. So we left Aggie with my mom, and then we went there, and actually we spent 3 weeks here because we were so inexperienced to traveling, we didn't book a seat to come home. And they couldn't get a seat for us. I was not there on Friday night, but I walked down to wait my husband to walk home. That is, he put his head and went down the floor before my husband. He was so impressed. So Sunday, next day, was a meeting. They made a contract. They wanted him already. So it was all beautiful, like a fairy tale. But because we knew that we don't know how we're able to come away. So they were lovely to us. They took us with the seaside, the big cars, and Max Bert, he was lovely. They took us there, I remember. So they show us around. Everything was nice. I just said to my husband that I don't want to live in Glasgow because it's so hilly. I said that because Mrs. Wolf, you know, where she lived is up there. Here I find hard to walk. I'm not used to it, you know. It's just a joke because we couldn't wait, you know, if we could come. So anyway, shortly, we went home. Eventually, they gave us a lot of presents. It was really nice to us. And some money, so very nice. And then we came home, and it's a whole year we planned how can we come away. We had a Jewish lawyer friend, so we went to advise. If we could, we apply from a passport. How do you call this passport? You know, immigration, an immigration passport. And then this guy said that you cannot apply because you will be refused, and then they're watching you. Even if you just say you go on holiday, you've been watched. That was the story with the Russians, you know. But it's happened that this passport was still 6 months valid.
Right.
So my husband cousin in Vienna, Max, they talk Yiddish in the phone because even you couldn't talk things like this because of all that hurt, you know. But Yiddish, you know, there's a hope that they can understand. So Max said that you just come, all of you, because my Agnes was on the passport. You just come, say just coming to holiday with me. And he rented a flat for us, you know. And then just say that. So when was a holiday, as I said, during the opera holiday, we decided we try. If we can't go, we could come back and still have the job, you know, in Budapest. So we came eventually and we just take with us a little summer clothes. We're going on holiday to Vienna for 2 weeks. So when we arrived there, the Max said that just come, we will see what can we do. And then we went there and then took us to the British Embassy and we showed our contract and they didn't believe us very much. They said that it's a year ago it was dated, maybe the job is not available. But they phoned to Glasgow and they checked and it was okay. So they said that the situation was, everything was arranged from this part.
Vienna.
Work permit and visa and everything. Just from there, we couldn't use that to put in a passport, a visa, because we didn't have a immigration passport.
Right.
So I went to the embassy, the British embassy, and talked to them because you could talk there, I felt. But I didn't say we ran away. I just said that we got a job, my husband got a job, and later on, when we're ready, we will go. And they got a house, it's true, it was true, because they offered us at 10th Third Avenue, you know, and then I said that I have to go there and see what I want to buy, furniture, blah, blah. But they said that it's, you know, that they still cannot put my visa, you know, because it was an agreement with the Hungarians.
Yes,
they
right.
couldn't work against them, you know. Mm-hmm. So we just went on a train. It's not far, Vienna. It's maybe 3 hours on the train or less from Budapest. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we spent nearly 4 weeks by the time they managed to get our... They sent a courier mm-hmm. from the British Embassy from Vienna to the Hungarian, to Budapest, mm-hmm. British Embassy, and this courier brought us the visa, and in Vienna they put it in for us. So it was a very unique situation, you know.
No, what I meant was you hadn't had your other children. Were your other children born in Scotland?
No, my daughter born other in Scotland. She born here in Scotland, yes, a few years after we came. Well, she's very young, she's just 41. I was 42 when she born to me. Yeah, surprise baby.
What year was that?
13th of July we arrived. It was a Tuesday, they came to the airport, Max. We didn't know him before. So they took us to Mrs. Wolf's, and then Jack Barman said that in Yiddish we could mm-hmm. talk, you know. Luckily, we could talk. Because we had nothing. We had the house, but we had nothing. Mm-hmm. We couldn't bring anything. So he said, tomorrow, 9 o'clock, I come for you, and then you make a list what you need. And they took us to her house and the Goldbergs. And then was up with my daughter, Aggie, who was 11, all night, and we made a list. I still got my little notebook. What we need for a new life, mm-hmm. dishes, meaty, mm-hmm. and then cutlery, and then everything, and bedclothes, and covers, you know, we had nothing, towels, you know. So we made a list, and then we bought everything what we need. And then we had no money that mm-hmm. time, but we paid off, you know, I don't know, 2-3 years, I think, just took a little bit off all the time. The Queen's Park, you know, they paid for us. And then it was Wednesday, and Thursday we went to the house. They took us to the house, and the goods arrived. Everything arrived on Thursday. And I remember Jack taught me how to make a bed in Scotland. Because we didn't have blankets.
We had duvets,
so I didn't know how to make a sheet. And you know, that he was nice. Mm-hmm. And then goods arrived, and then in the afternoon he took us to Morrison's mm-hmm. and the kosher butcher, and then we shopped, and it was Thursday. And Friday night was my first Friday night. I cooked, I baked, I had a picture somewhere, and we were sitting in my beautiful big dining room. Max gave me 2 candlesticks. Mm-hmm. Not very nice, but something, you know. And then my husband went to school, to Daven, the first service, and then came home, and was a candle lighted, was everything ready. So it was such a happy, happy day. Mm-hmm. And then I just say that since we never looked back, really, mm-hmm. never looked back. But we couldn't go home mm-hmm. for 17 years, because if we would go back, they would put us to jail, mm-hmm. because we left the country. And then 3 of us started to learn English. But my husband just dropped out, and Agnes had to go to school. We didn't want to force her very much. We didn't want to know at all, you know. Mm-hmm. She confessed that later. It was a very difficult situation, Agnes, because in the school she was not allowed to say that she's Jewish, and she go to school, and we took her to the cheder every Sunday morning. It was a cheder, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. So she was not allowed to tell about this. You know, it's a young child. It was very hard on her. Really, mm-hmm. really very hard. But I thank God at the end we managed to get here and start a free life, you know.
Did you go to the opera here?
Always free tickets. So every week we went to the opera, once a week.
And did your husband miss being an opera singer?
They were still singing opera concerts here, you know. He was always singing.
Eva, we always finish with asking people to see their highlights.
Yes.
And not so much in the low points of their lives, yeah. But what would you say, reflecting back, what would you say are your highlights?
To live here.
And about, quite often people say...
I told you that, you know, it was a new world. It was a new world, a free world. You could say what your opinion was, what we missed very much. And also, you can practice your religion freely. Mm-hmm. We financially, we were really fine, because my husband, you could say, had two jobs. Because, example, he was already in the opera, and then from Berlin came, they asked for a chazon, because there was no Jewish chazon. So the government recommended my husband, you know, because he was the best voice, you know. So my husband went to sing in Berlin for high holidays, and we didn't know a long time, didn't want to tell us, you know. We were always hoped that he will come home. But my brother, thank God, came back, but he was very ill all his life. But he still managed, he was 86 when he passed away, 2 years ago he passed away.
And so you have three grandsons, I know that.
Five.
I was going to say, and what's your other daughter have? It's grandsons.
I have five grandsons, yeah. Thank God.
Eva, I'd like to say thank you very much for the interview. It was very interesting.
You're welcome.
And thank you very much.